The Prince's Bedchamber. Beauty awoke to new terror. It was getting dusk, the feast was over. The lords and ladies who remained were very loud and swept up in the fever of the afternoon. But she was being unbound and she did not know what would now happen to her. Several other slaves had been soundly spanked during the course of the banquet, and it seemed finally that no offense was required. Merely the decision of a lord or lady. The request was then granted by the queen, and the unlucky one was thrust up over the page's knee, his head bowed, his feet dangling off the ground, and down came the golden paddle. Twice it had been young women. And one of them had broken into silent sobs, but there was in her manner something that made Beauty a little suspicious. After she was spanked, she scurried all too fast to the queen's feet, and Beauty hoped she would be spanked again until her sobs were real, and all her scurrying was real. And she found herself vaguely delighted when the queen ordered it. Now, as Beauty was awakened, she thought dreamily of all this, and felt sharp fear, and also some sense of drama. Would she be sent away to some place with all these slaves? Or would the prince take her? She was stunned with confusion when she realized the prince had risen and given an order to the gray-eyed lord to bring Beauty after him. She was untied. She was very stiff. But the lord now had one of those gold paddles in his hand, which he tested loudly upon his palm, and giving her no time to stretch her aching muscles, he ordered her down on her knees and forward. When she hesitated, his command came very sharp again, but he did not strike her. She rushed to catch up with the prince who had just reached the stairway. And soon she was following him up and down a long corridor. Beauty, he stood back. Open the doors. And kneeling up, she quickly opened them and forced them apart, and then followed the prince into a bedchamber. The fire was already a great blaze on the hearth, and the windows were curtained. And the bed had been turned back, and Beauty was quivering with excitement. My prince, shall I begin her training at once? Asked the gray-eyed lord. No, my lord. I shall attend to it myself the first few days. Possibly longer, said the prince. Though you may, of course, whenever the occasion arises, instruct her, teach her manners, the general rules that pertain to all the slaves, and so forth. She does not drop her eyes as she should, as you can see. She is so very inquisitive. And at this he smiled, though Beauty at once looked down, much as she wanted to see it. She knelt obediently, glad her hair concealed her. And then she checked herself in this thought. She was not learning much if that was what she wanted. She wondered if Prince Alexei had been ashamed of his nakedness. He had had large brown eyes and such a beautiful mouth. But he was much too lean to be cherubic. She wondered where he was now, and was he being punished for more of his clumsiness? Very well, Your Highness, said the lord. But I think you realize that firmness in the beginning is a mercy to the slave, especially when the slave is such a proud and spoilt princess. Beauty blushed to hear this. The prince gave a low, gentle laugh. My beauty is very like an unstamped coin, said the prince, and I wish to draw in the full character. I shall take delight in training her. I wonder if you yourself are as attentive to her faults as I am. Your Highness, the lord seemed to stiffen slightly. You are not yourself so very strict with her in the great hall that you prevented her from feasting her eyes on young Prince Alexei. I rather think she enjoyed his punishment as much as her masters and mistresses. Beauty flushed hotly. She had never dreamed that the prince had observed her in this. Your Highness, she was only learning what will be expected of her. Or so I thought, the lord answered very humbly. It was I who drew her attention to the other slaves, so she might profit from their obedient example. Ah, well, said the prince wearily and agreeably. Perhaps I am only too enamored of her. After all, she wasn't sent to me as a tribute. I won her, and claimed her myself. And I am too jealous, it seems. Perhaps I seek for some reason to punish her. You're dismissed. Come for her in the morning, if you will, and we shall see." The lord, obviously worried that he had failed, left the room quickly. Beauty was now alone with the prince, and the prince was sitting quietly by the fire looking at her. She was in a great state of agitation. She knew she was blushing, as always, and that her breasts were heaving slightly. She rushed forward quite suddenly and pressed her lips to the prince's boot, and it seemed to move as if it welcomed her kiss, rising slightly as over and over again she kissed it. She was moaning. Oh, if only he'd given her permission to speak, and when she thought of her fascination with the punished prince, she blushed all the more. But her prince had risen. He took her wrist and lifted her, and drawing her hands behind her back so that he held them firmly, he spanked both her breasts hard until she cried out, feeling the heavy flesh sway and the sting of his hands on her nipples. "Am I angry with you? Or am I not?" he asked softly. She groaned, imploring him again, and he placed her over his knee as she had seen the young prince over the page's knee. And with his bare hand, he gave her a smart torrent of blows that had her crying aloud in an instant. "To whom do you belong?" he demanded in a low but angry voice.
"To you, my prince, completely," she cried out. It was dreadful, and then, suddenly, unable to control herself, she said, "Please, please, my prince, not in anger, no!"
But instantly his left hand clamped over her mouth, and she felt another terrible torrent of hot spanks until her flesh was stinging and she couldn't control her crying. She could feel the prince's fingers against her lips, but he would hardly be satisfied with this. He had her on her feet now, and by her wrists he led her to a corner of the room between the blazing fire and the curtained window. There was a high stool there made of carved wood, and on this he sat while he stood her beside him. She was crying softly, but she dared not beg again, no matter what happened. He was angry, fiercely angry, and though she could endure any pain for his pleasure, this was unbearable for her. She must please him, must make him loving again, and then any pain at all would not be too much. He turned her, and she stood facing him as he sat inspecting her. She dared not look him in the face. And then he drew back his cloak, and laying his hand on the golden buckle of his belt, said, "Unfasten this." At once she went to obey with her teeth without being told that was how she might do it. She hoped and prayed he would be pleased. She pulled on the leather, her breath soft and fast, and then pulled the strap back so that the belt came loose. "Now pull it off," said the prince, "and give it to me." She obeyed at once, even though she knew what would follow. It was a thick, wide leather belt. Maybe it would be no worse than a paddle. Now he told her to raise her hands and her eyes, and she saw above a metal hook just over her head hanging from a chain on the ceiling. "You see, here we are not without provisions for disobedient little slaves," he said in his usual gentle voice. "Now, clasp that hook, though it will put you on tiptoe, and you will not dream of letting go of it. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, my prince," she cried softly.
She had hold of it, and it seemed to stretch her out. And the prince moved back the stool on which he sat and appeared to make himself comfortable. He had ample room in which to swing the strap which he had made into a loop, and he was silent for a moment. Beauty cursed herself for ever admiring young Prince Alexei, yet she was ashamed that his very name had formed in her mind. And when she felt the first hard smack of the belt on her thighs, she let out a frightened little cry, but was glad of it. She deserved this, and she would never again make such a terrible mistake, no matter how beautiful or enticing were the slaves, and her boldness to look at them had been unforgivable. The wide, heavy leather belt struck her with a loud, frightening sound, and the flesh of her thighs, more tender perhaps than her buttocks, even sore as they were, seemed to ignite under it. Her mouth was open, she could not keep herself quiet. And suddenly the prince ordered her to lift her knees and march in place. "Quickly, quickly, yes, in rhythm," he said angrily. And Beauty, astonished, struggled to obey, marching fast, her breasts moving with the effort, her heart pounding. "Higher, faster," the prince commanded. She marched as he commanded, her feet slapping the stone floor, her knees coming up very high, her breasts a terrible aching weight as they swayed. And again came the belt smacking her and stinging her. The prince seemed in a fury. The blows came faster and faster, as fast as she was moving her legs, and very soon Beauty was writhing and struggling to get away from them. She was crying aloud, unable to stop herself, but the worst of it, was his anger. If only this were for his delight. If only he were pleased with her. She was crying and burying her face in her arm, and the balls of her feet were burning, and her thighs felt swollen and blotched with pain, as now again he took out his temper upon her buttocks. The smacks came so quickly she had no sense of how many there were, only that it was a great deal more than he'd ever given her before. And it seemed he only grew more agitated, his left hand now thrusting her chin up and closing her mouth so she couldn't cry. All the while, he commanded her to march faster and lift her legs higher. "You belong to me," he said without ever stopping the loud, spanking belt. "And you will learn to please me in all things. And you will never please me with your eyes upon the male slaves of my mother. Is this clear to you? Do you understand?"
"Yes, my prince," she struggled to say.
But he seemed at wit's end to punish her. And stopping her suddenly by lifting her around the middle, he brought her up over the stool which he had just left, so that dangling from the hook which she held for dear life, she was now thrust over it. The wooden seat of the stool pressing into her naked sex, her legs out helplessly behind her. And then he sent his worst rain of blows on her, hard, snapping spanks that made her calves quiver and sting as her thighs had done before. But no matter how he busied himself with her legs, he always returned to her buttocks, punishing them the hardest, so that Beauty was choking with sobs and felt this as endless. Quite suddenly, he stopped. "Let go the hook," he commanded. And then he scooped her up over his shoulder, and taking her across the room, he flung her down on the bed. She fell back on the pillow, and immediately beneath her sore and swollen buttocks and thighs felt a prickling and a roughness. She had only to cast her head slightly to the side to see the jewels glittering on the coverlet. And she knew how they would torture her as soon as he had mounted her. But she wanted him so badly, and when she saw him rise up over her, she felt not the hot, throbbing pain in her body, but a flood of juices between her legs, and a new moan coming out of her as she opened herself to him. She couldn't keep from lifting her hips, praying it didn't displease him. He knelt over her, removing his erect cock from his breeches, and then he brought her up on her knees and impaled her upon it. She cried out, her head fell back. It was a great, hard, driving thing inside her sore and quivering orifice, but she felt it bathed with her juices, and as the prince forced it in deeper and brought her down upon it, it seemed a spit that rubbed against some mysterious core in her, sending the ecstasy washing through her, so she was giving great, guttural moans in spite of herself. The prince's thrusts came faster and faster, and then he too gave a soft cry and held her close to him, her breasts aching and pressed to his chest, his lips upon the back of her neck, his body softening slowly. "Beauty, Beauty," he whispered. You have conquered me as surely as I have conquered you. Don't ever arouse my jealousy again. I don't know what I would do if you did it.
My prince, she moaned, and kissed him on the mouth, and when she saw the distress in his face, she covered it with kisses. I am your slave, my prince, she said. But he would only moan and press his face into her neck and seemed bereft. I love you, she implored him, and then he laid her down on the bed and, drawing up beside her, took his wine from the bedside stand and, gazing at the fire, seemed for a long time to be thinking. Prince Alexei. Beauty dreamed a dream of boredom. She roamed the castle in which she had lived all her life with nothing to do, and now and then paused in a deep window seat to watch the tiny figures of the peasants in the fields below gathering the fresh mown grass into haystacks. The sky was cloudless, and she disliked the look of it, its sameness and vastness. It seemed she could not find anything to do that hadn't been done 1,000 times before. And then, suddenly, there came to her ears a sound she could not identify. She followed the sound, and through a doorway saw an old woman, bent and ugly, plying a strange contraption. It was a great turning wheel with a thread that was winding itself upon a spindle. What is it? Beauty asked with great interest. Come see for yourself, said the old woman, who had the most remarkable voice because it was young and strong and so unlike her visage. It seemed Beauty had only just touched this marvelous machine with its whirring wheel when she fell down in a great swoon, and all about her heard the world weeping. Sleep, sleep for 100 years! And she wanted to cry out, unbearable, worse than death, for it seemed some great deepening of the ennui she had struggled against ever since she could remember, the wandering from room to room. But she awoke. She was not at home. She was lying in the bed of her prince, and she felt the prickling of the jeweled coverlet beneath her. The room was full of the leaping shadows of the fire, and she saw the gleam of the carved posts of the bed and the drapery fallen about her in rich colors. She felt herself animated and flushed with desire. And she rose up, so eager was she to lose the weight and texture of her dream, and she realized that the prince was not beside her. But there he was by the fire, his elbow against the stone above it, which bore a great crest with crossed swords. He wore his brilliant red velvet cloak still, and his high, turned-down leather boots with their pointed toes, and his face was sharpened with brooding. The pulse between her legs quickened. She stirred and gave some faint little sigh so that he awoke from his thoughts and approached her. She could not see his expression in the darkness. All right. There is but one answer, he said to her. You shall become accustomed to all the sights of the castle, and I shall become accustomed to seeing you accustomed to them. He pulled the bell rope by the bed, and lifting Beauty, he sat her at the end of the bed so that her legs were curled under her. A page entered, as innocent as the boy who had so diligently punished Prince Alexei, and like all the pages, he was extremely tall with powerful arms. Beauty was certain they had all been chosen for these endowments. She had no doubt he could have held her by the ankles had he been ordered, but his face was smooth without the slightest meanness. Where is Prince Alexei? The prince demanded. He appeared angry and resolute, and he paced back and forth as he spoke. Oh, he is in frightful trouble tonight, Your Highness. The queen is much concerned with his clumsiness. You know he must be her example to others. She has had him tied in the garden most uncomfortably. Yes, well, I shall make him even more uncomfortable. Obtain my mother's permission and bring him to me, and bring Squire Felix with him. Beauty heard all this in quiet amazement. She tried to make her face as smooth as the page's face, but she was more than alarmed.
she was going to see Prince Alexei again, and she could not imagine concealing her feelings from her prince. If only she could distract him from this. But when she made a little whispering sound, he ordered her at once to be quiet and to sit where she was, and to cast her eyes down. Her hair fell around her, tickling her naked arms and her thighs, and almost with pleasure she realized there was no escaping this. Squire Felix appeared almost immediately, and as she had suspected, he was the page who had so vigorously spanked Prince Alexei earlier. He had the gold paddle fixed to his belt, so it dangled at his side as he bowed to the prince. "All of those who serve here are picked for their gifts," Beauty thought, looking at him, for he too was fair, and his blonde hair made an excellent frame for his youthful face, though it was somewhat plainer than those of the captive princes. "And Prince Alexei?" the prince demanded. His color was high, his eyes had an almost evil glitter, and Beauty became frightened again. "We're preparing him, Your Highness," said Squire Felix. "And why should this take so long? How long has he served in this house that he should be so lacking in respect?" At once Prince Alexei was brought in. Beauty tried not to admire him. He was naked as before, of course, she'd expected no less, and in the light of the fire she could see that his face was flushed and his auburn hair hung loose in his eyes, which were cast down as if he dared not lift them to the prince. They were of about the same age, surely, and about the same height. But here stood the darker Prince Alexei, quite helpless and humble before the prince who was striding back and forth before the fire, his face cold and merciless and slightly agitated. Prince Alexei's organ was rigid. He held his hands behind his neck. "So, you were not ready for me?" the prince whispered. He drew closer, inspecting Prince Alexei. He looked at the stiffened organ, and then with his hand he gave it a rough slap, so that Prince Alexei flinched in spite of himself. "Perhaps you need a little training in being always ready," whispered the prince. His words came slowly and with a deliberate courtesy. He lifted Prince Alexei's chin and looked into his eyes. Beauty caught herself staring at them both without the slightest shyness. "My apologies, Your Highness," Prince Alexei said, and his voice was low in timbre, calm, without rebellion or shame. The prince's lips spread slowly in a smile. Prince Alexei's eyes were larger and they possessed the same calm as the voice. It seemed to Beauty they might even drain away the prince's anger, but this was impossible. The prince stroked Prince Alexei's organ and gave it another playful slap, and then another. The submissive prince looked down again, and there was nothing in him but the grace and dignity Beauty had witnessed before. "I must behave like this," she thought. "I must have this manner, this strength, to bear it all with the same dignity." Yet she marveled. The captive prince must at all times show his desire, his fascination, while she could conceal this craving between her legs, and she could not stop herself from wincing as she saw the prince pinch the tiny hardened nipples on Prince Alexei's chest, and then lift Prince Alexei's chin again to inspect his face. Beyond them, Squire Felix watched all with obvious pleasure. He had folded his arms, his legs rather wide apart as he stood, and his eyes moved hungrily over Prince Alexei's body. "How long have you been in the service of my mother?" the prince demanded. 2 years, Your Highness," said the humble prince softly. Beauty was quite astonished. 2 years. It seemed to her all of her life before had not been so long, but she was more rapt with the sound of his voice than with the words. The voice made him seem more palpable and visible. His body was a little thicker than that of the prince, and the dark brown hair between his legs was beautiful. She could see the scrotum, no more than a shadow. "You were sent here in tribute by your father, as your mother demanded, Your Highness." "And to serve how many years?"
As long as it pleases your highness and my mistress the queen, Prince Alexei answered. And you are what, 19, and a model among the other tributes? Prince Alexei blushed. The prince turned him towards Beauty with a rough blow on the shoulder and steered him towards the bed. Beauty drew herself up, feeling her face flushed and warm. And the favorite of my mother? The prince demanded. Not tonight, your highness, Prince Alexei said with the barest trace of a smile. The prince acknowledged this with a soft laugh. No, you have not comported yourself very well today, have you? I can only beg forgiveness, your highness, said Prince Alexei.
You can do more than that, said the prince into his ear as he pushed him nearer to Beauty. You can suffer for it. And you can give my beauty a lesson in willingness and perfect submission.
Now the prince turned his gaze on Beauty, scrutinizing her mercilessly. She looked down, terrified of displeasing him.
Look at Prince Alexei, he told her.
And when she raised her eyes, she saw the beautiful captive prince only a few inches from her. His disheveled hair partially veiled his face, and his skin appeared deliciously smooth to her. She was trembling. Just as she feared he would, the prince lifted Prince Alexei's chin again, and when Prince Alexei looked at her with his large brown eyes, he smiled very slowly and serenely at her for an instant the prince could not have witnessed. Beauty drank her fill of him with her eyes because she had no choice, and hoped the prince would see no more than her distress.
Kiss my new slave, and welcome her to this house. Kiss her lips and her breasts, said the prince.
And he lifted Prince Alexei's hands from the back of his neck so they went silently and obediently to his sides. Beauty gasped. Prince Alexei was smiling at her again, secretly, as his shadow fell over her, and she felt his lips close over hers and the shock of his kiss pass through her. She could feel that misery between her legs formed into a tight knot, and when his lips touched her left breast and then her right, she bit into her lower lip so hard she might have drawn blood. Prince Alexei's hair stroked her cheek and her breasts as he carried out the command, and then he stood back with that same beguiling equanimity. Beauty put her hands to her face before she could stop herself, but immediately the prince took them away.
Look well, Beauty. Study this example of the obedient slave. Become accustomed to him so that you do not see him, but rather the example he sets for you,
the prince said. And roughly he turned Prince Alexei about so that Beauty could see the red marks on his buttocks. Prince Alexei had received far worse punishment than Beauty. He was bruised, and there were many white and pink welts on his thighs and on his calves. The prince inspected all this almost indifferently.
You will not look away again, the prince said to Beauty. Do you understand me?
Yes, my prince, Beauty said at once, only too eager to show her obedience, and in the very midst of her painful distress, an odd feeling of resignation came over her. She must look at Prince Alexei's exquisitely muscled young body. She must look at his taut and beautifully molded buttocks. If only she could hide her fascination, feign only submission. But the prince was no longer looking at her. He had taken both Prince Alexei's wrists in his left hand and had taken from Squire Felix not the golden paddle, but rather a long, flat, leather-sheathed stick which appeared heavy and with which he struck Alexei several loud blows on his calves rapidly. He pulled his captive to the center of the room. He placed his foot on the rung of the stool as he had done earlier and pushed Prince Alexei over his knee just as he had done Beauty. Prince Alexei's back was to Beauty and she could see not only his buttocks but also the scrotum between his legs. And she saw the flat leather stick land its blows in red crisscrossed marks over Prince Alexei. Prince Alexei did not struggle,
He made hardly a sound. His feet were planted on the floor, and nothing in his form suggested any attempt to escape the aim of the stick as Beauty might. Yet even as she watched, amazed, wondering at his control and his endurance, she could see the signs of strain in him. He moved ever so slightly, his buttocks rising and falling, his legs quivering, and then she could hear the slightest sound from him. A whispered moan which he was obviously concealing behind his closed lips. The prince flailed at him, the skin growing a darker red with each broad stripe from the stick, and then, when his desire seemed to have reached a crest, he ordered Prince Alexei down on his hands and knees before him. Beauty could see Prince Alexei's face. It was stained with tears, but the composure had not broken. He knelt before the prince, waiting. The prince lifted his pointed boot and thrust it under Prince Alexei, touching the tip of Prince Alexei's penis. Then he took Prince Alexei by the hair and lifted his head. "Open it," he said softly. Immediately Prince Alexei moved to put his lips to the seam in the prince's breeches. With a skill that amazed Beauty, he unsnapped the hooks that concealed the prince's bulging sex and revealed it. The organ was enlarged and hardened, and Prince Alexei freed it from the cloth now and tenderly kissed it. But he was in great pain still, and when the prince thrust the organ into Prince Alexei's mouth, he was not prepared for it. He fell backwards a little on his knees and had to reach for the prince, caressingly, to stop himself from falling. But immediately he sucked the prince's organ, and he did it with great back-and-forth motions that amazed Beauty. His eyes closed, his hands hovering at his sides, ready for the prince's command. The prince stopped him rather quickly. It was clear he did not want his passion brought to a pinnacle. Nothing so simple would happen. "Go to the chest in the corner," he said to Prince Alexei, "and bring me the ring that is in it." Prince Alexei went on his hands and knees to obey, but obviously the prince wasn't satisfied. He snapped his finger, and Squire Felix at once drove Prince Alexei with his paddle. He drove him to the chest and continued to torment him with the paddle while he opened the chest and with his teeth removed a large leather ring and brought it back to the prince. Only then did the prince send Squire Felix back to his corner, and Prince Alexei was out of breath and trembling. "Put it on," said the prince. Prince Alexei was holding the leather ring not by the leather itself, but by some small piece of gold attached to it. And still holding it this way in his teeth, he slipped the ring over the prince's penis, but he did not release it. "You serve me. You go where I go," said the prince. And now he proceeded to walk slowly about the room, his hands on his hips as he looked down on the prince struggling on his knees, his teeth to the leather ring to follow him. It was as if Prince Alexei were kissing the prince or tethered to him. He scrambled backwards, his hands out so as not to touch the prince disrespectfully. The prince, with ordinary strides that took no cognizance of the difficulty of his slave, approached the bed, and then, turning, made his way back to the fire, his slave struggling before him. Suddenly he turned his body hard to the left to face Beauty, and when he did, Prince Alexei had to take hold of him for balance. Prince Alexei clung to him for a moment, and when he did, he pressed his forehead against the prince's thigh, and the prince rather idly stroked his hair. It seemed almost affectionate. "You so dislike the ignominious position, don't you?" he whispered. But before Prince Alexei might have answered, he struck him a hard blow on the face that sent him backwards and away from him. Then he pushed Prince Alexei down on all fours. "Back and forth across the room," he said with a snap of his fingers to Squire Felix. As always, the squire was only too happy to oblige. Beauty hated him. He drove Prince Alexei across the floor to the far wall and then back again to the door. "Faster," the prince said sharply. Prince Alexei moved as swiftly as he could.
Beauty could not bear to hear the anger in the prince's tone, and she raised her hands to cover her mouth. But the prince wanted more speed. The paddle came down again and again on Prince Alexei's buttocks, and the command came again and again until he was scurrying to obey the commands, and she could see his terrible misery that he had lost all grace and dignity. Now she understood the prince's little taunt. Prince Alexei's calm and grace had obviously been his consolation. But had he really lost them? Or was he merely, calmly, giving this, too, to the prince? She couldn't tell. She winced with each spank of the paddle, and each time Prince Alexei turned to go back across the room, she caught a full glimpse of his tormented buttocks. Quite suddenly, however, Squire Felix stopped. "I've drawn blood, Your Highness," he said. Prince Alexei knelt with his head down, panting. The prince looked at him and then he nodded. He snapped his fingers for Prince Alexei to rise, and again he lifted his chin and looked into his tear-stained face. "So, you are reprieved for the night by virtue of that all-too-delicate skin of yours," he said. He turned him towards Beauty again. Prince Alexei's hands were on the back of his neck, and his face, flushed and wet, was indescribably beautiful to her. It was full of unspoken emotion, and as he was led closer to her, she could feel her heart pounding. "If he kisses me again, I shall die," she thought. "I shall never hide my feelings from the prince. And if it is the rule that I can be spanked until he draws blood." She had no real idea what that might mean, except a great deal more pain than she had already felt. But even that would be preferable to the prince discovering how fascinated she remained with Prince Alexei. "Why does he do this?" she thought desperately. But the prince thrust Prince Alexei forward. "Put your face in her lap," he said, "and your arms about her." Beauty gasped and sat up, but Prince Alexei obeyed immediately. Beauty looked down to see his auburn hair covering her sex as she felt his lips against her thighs and his arms enclose her. His body was hot and pulsing. She could feel the beating of his heart. And without meaning to, she reached out to clasp his hips with her hands. The prince kicked Prince Alexei's legs wide apart and, taking Beauty's head roughly in his left hand so that he might kiss her, he drove his organ into Prince Alexei's anus. Prince Alexei moaned at the roughness and swiftness of the thrusts. Beauty felt the pressure against her as Prince Alexei was driven ever more quickly by it. The prince had let her go, and she was crying. She held tight to Prince Alexei, and then the prince gave his final thrust with a moan, his hands pressed to Prince Alexei's back, and he stood still, letting his pleasure course through him. Beauty tried to keep herself quiet. Prince Alexei let her go, but not without a secret little kiss between her legs, right on the crest of her pubic hair. And just as he was being drawn away, again, his dark eyes narrowed in a secret smile for her. "Mount him in the passage," said the prince to the squire, "and see no one satisfies him. Keep him in torment. Every quarter of the hour remind him of his duty to his prince, but do not satisfy him." Prince Alexei was taken away. Beauty sat staring at the open door. But it was not over. The prince reached out and, taking her by the hair, told her to follow him. "On your hands and knees, my dear. That is always the way you will move through the castle," he said, "unless told otherwise." She hurried along, following him out and to the edge of the stairway. Halfway down was a broad landing from which one might see directly into the great hall. And on the landing was a stone statue that frightened Beauty. It was a pagan god of some sort with an erect phallus. It was onto this phallus that Prince Alexei was now thrust, his legs bound apart on the pedestal of the statue. His head was laid back on the statue's shoulder. He gave another moan as the phallus impaled him, and then he lay still, as Squire Felix bound his hands behind his back. The statue's right arm was upraised, the stone fingers of the hand forming a circle as if they had once clasped a knife or some other instrument. And now the squire carefully positioned Prince Alexei's head on the shoulder of the statue beneath that hand. And through the clasped hand he placed a leather phallus, anchoring it so that it fit into Prince Alexei's mouth. It seemed now that the statue raped him both through his anus and through his mouth, and he was bound to it. And his organ, as stiff as before, lay thrust forward as the phallus of the statue was inside of him. "Now you are perhaps a little more used to your Prince Alexei," said the prince softly. "But this is too terrible," Beauty thought, "that he must spend the night in this misery." Prince Alexei's back was painfully arched, his legs bound wide apart, and the moonlight from the window behind him made a long line down his throat, his smooth chest, and his flat belly. The prince tugged gently on Beauty's hair, which he held wrapped around his right hand, and leading her back to bed, he laid her down and told her to sleep, as he would soon be doing beside her. Prince Alexei and Felix. It was almost dawn. The prince lay deep asleep, and Beauty, who had been waiting for his heavy sleeping breaths, slipped out of the bed, and on all fours, out of stealth, not obedience, crept into the corridor. She had lain for a long time looking at the door, seeing that it had never been really shut, and she might make her small escape without noise if she only had the courage. She crept to the top of the steps. The light fell full on Prince Alexei, and she could see that his organ was rigid as before, and Squire Felix was talking to him, softly. She could not hear what the squire said, but she was furious to see him awake. She had hoped that he too would now be sleeping. And as she watched, quite unknown to Squire Felix, she saw him come round in front of Prince Alexei and torment the organ again with a volley of slaps that sounded very loud in the empty stairwell. The captive prince gave a little moan, and Beauty could see his chest heave with his breath. Squire Felix walked back and forth restlessly. Then he looked at the prince, and it seemed he turned his head from left to right as though listening. Beauty held her breath. She was terrified she might be discovered. Squire Felix drew near to Prince Alexei, and putting his arms around his hips, he covered Prince Alexei's organ with his mouth and began sucking it. Beauty was beside herself with frustration and anger. This was just what she had meant to do. She had imagined herself braving all dangers to do it. And now she was forced to watch as Squire Felix tormented the poor prince. But to her surprise, Squire Felix was not merely tantalizing Prince Alexei. Squire Felix seemed quite in earnest. He was ravaging the organ with a regular rhythm, and Beauty knew from the moans that Prince Alexei couldn't conceal he was now reaching the climax of his passion. His taut, cruelly bound body shuddered with one protracted groan after another, and then he lay still as Squire Felix drew back and moved into the shadows. It seemed he spoke to Prince Alexei then. Beauty leaned her head against the stone balustrade. After a little while, Squire Felix told Prince Alexei to wake, and he gave the organ those tormenting slaps again. And when it seemed reluctant, Squire Felix seemed fearful and became threatening. But Prince Alexei was deep asleep in his painful tethers, and Beauty was very pleased to see this. She turned and silently made her way back to the bedroom door when she realized that someone was near her. She was so frightened that she almost screamed, a mistake which would surely have destroyed her. But she covered her mouth, and lifting her eyes, she saw in the distant shadows the figure of Lord Gregory watching her. This was the gray-haired lord who had wanted so to discipline her properly, who had called her spoilt. Yet he did not move.
He stood still, watching her. And when she had stopped trembling, she rushed as quickly as she could back to the prince's bed and slipped under the coverlet beside him. He had never awakened. She lay in the dark, waiting for Lord Gregory to come, but he did not. And she soon realized he would not dream of waking the prince, and then she was half dozing. She was thinking of Prince Alexei in a thousand ways, of the redness of his sore flesh after the paddle, of his beautiful brown eyes and his strong, somewhat compact body. She was thinking of his glossy hair against her, the secret kiss he gave her thighs, and how, after this terrible humiliation, he had given her that smile which was so serene and affectionate. The torment between her legs was no worse than before, and no better. She dared not touch it with her fingers lest she be discovered, and it was too shameful to think of such things, and she was sure the prince would never allow it. The Slaves' Hall. It was late afternoon when Beauty awoke. She realized that the prince and Lord Gregory were in an argument. Immediately, she was afraid, but as she lay still, she perceived that Lord Gregory had obviously not told the prince what he had seen. Surely her punishment would be terrible if he had. Rather, Lord Gregory was arguing only that Beauty must be taken to the slaves' hall and properly groomed. "Your Highness, you are enamored of her, of course," Lord Gregory said. "But you remember, surely, your own censure of other lords, especially your cousin, Lord Stefan, on account of his excessive love for his slave." "It is not excessive love," the prince answered sharply. But then he stopped, as if Lord Gregory had hit upon the truth. "Well, maybe you should take her to the slaves' hall," he murmured, "though only for the day." As soon as Lord Gregory had taken her out of the room, he unfastened the paddle attached to his belt and gave her several cruel spanks as she hurried on her hands and knees before him. "Keep your eyes down and your head down," he said coldly, "and lift your knees gracefully. Your back is to be a straight line at all times, and you are not to look to either side. Is this clear to you?"
"Yes, my lord," Beauty answered timidly. She could see a great expanse of stone before her, and though the paddle smacks had not been very hard, she found she resented them enormously. They had not come from the prince, and it was just coming to her that now she was in Lord Gregory's power. Perhaps she'd fancied he couldn't strike her, wouldn't be allowed to, but that was obviously not the case, and she realized he might tell the prince she had disobeyed when she had not, and she might not be allowed to speak for herself. "Move faster," he told her. "You are always to take a rapid pace, showing your eagerness to please your lords and ladies," he said, and again there came one of those sharp, degrading little spanks that seemed suddenly quite worse than harder ones. They had come to a narrow doorway, and Beauty perceived that a long, curving ramp lay before her. It was quite clever, as she could not have gone down a staircase on her hands and knees, but this she could follow, and she did with Lord Gregory's pointed leather boots right beside her. Several times he availed himself of the paddle, so that by the time they reached the door of a vast room on the lower floor, her buttocks were burning a little. But what concerned her much more was that there were people here. She had seen no one in the passage above, and she felt torturously shy as she realized that there were many people in this hall moving about and talking to one another. Now she was told to sit up and back on her heels, with her hands clasped to the back of her neck. "This will always be your position when you are told to rest," Lord Gregory said, "and keep your eyes down." Yet even as she obeyed this command, she could see what the room was. There were deep shelves cut into the walls all along three sides of it, and on these shelves, on pallets, slept the many slaves, both male and female. But she could not see Prince Alexei. She did see a beautiful black-haired girl with very plump little buttocks who appeared in quite deep sleep, and a blonde-haired young man who appeared to be strapped on his back, though she could not tell, and others, all of whom were in a drowsy state, if not dozing. And before her were many tables in a row, and among them pots of steaming water from which came a delicious fragrance. "This is where you will be bathed and groomed always," said Lord Gregory, in that same cold voice. "And when the prince has had quite enough of sleeping with you, as though you were his love, you shall sleep here too, and at any time when the prince has no specific orders for you. Your groom is named Leon. He will care for you in all details. And to him you shall show the same respect and obedience you show to everyone." Beauty saw before her the slender figure of a young man directly beside Lord Gregory. And as he drew nearer, Lord Gregory snapped his fingers and told her to show her respect. At once Beauty kissed his boots. "To the lowest scullery maid you owe this respect," Lord Gregory said. "And should I ever detect the slightest haughtiness in you, I shall punish you severely. I am not as, shall we say, impressed with you as is your prince."
"Yes, my lord," Beauty answered respectfully. But she was angry. She felt she had shown no haughtiness. But Leon's voice calmed her immediately.
"Come, my dear," he said, gesturing with a pat of his hand against his thigh for her to follow him. And it seemed Lord Gregory disappeared as Leon led her into a brick-lined alcove where a large wooden tub stood, steaming. The scent of the herbs was very strong. Leon gestured for her to rise up again, and taking her hands, he lifted them over her head and told her to kneel in the tub. She climbed into it at once and felt the delicious warm water come almost up to her sex. Leon wrapped her hair in a circle on the back of her head and fixed it with several pins. She could see him clearly now. He was older than the page boys, but just as fair, and his hazel eyes were very appealing in their gentleness. He told her to keep her hands behind her neck and that he was going to give her a thorough cleansing and that she must enjoy it.
"Are you very tired?"
he asked her.
"Not so tired,
My lord will do," he said with a smile. "Even the lowliest stable boy is your lord, Beauty," he said. "And you must always answer respectfully."
"Yes, my lord," she whispered.
He was already bathing her, and the warm water washing down her did feel very good to her. He lathered her neck and her arms.
"Have you just awakened?"
"Yes, my lord," she said.
"I see.
But you must be tired from your long journey. The first few days slaves are always overexcited. They don't feel their exhaustion. And then after that they begin to sleep for many hours. You'll feel it soon, and there will be an aching in your arms and legs, too. I don't mean from your punishment, I mean only from your fatigue. When that happens, I'll massage you and soothe you."
His voice was so gentle that Beauty warmed to him at once. His sleeves were rolled to the elbows, and there was golden hair on his arms, and his fingers were very sure as he washed her ears and her face, careful not to get the soap in her eyes.
"And you have been punished very severely, haven't you?"
Beauty blushed. He laughed softly.
"Very good, my dear. You are learning already. Never answer such a question as that. It could be taken as a complaint if you did. Anytime you are asked if you have been punished too much or suffered too much or anything of that sort, be clever enough to blush."
But even as he spoke almost affectionately, he began washing her breasts just as calmly as he had washed the rest of her, and Beauty's blushes became more painful. She could feel her nipples harden, and she was certain, though she could see nothing but the soapy water before her, that he was noticing this as his hands slowed slightly, and then he pushed at her inner thigh gently.
"Spread your legs, dearest," he said.
She obeyed, kneeling with her legs farther apart, and then farther as he pushed her. He had become still, and now drying his hand on the towel at his waist, he touched her sex, and she felt herself shudder.
Her sex was moist and swollen with desire, and to her horror, his hand touched a small, hard knot in which much of her craving was accumulated. She drew back involuntarily.
Ah.
He withdrew his fingers and, turning, called to Lord Gregory.
A very lovely flower, this, he said. Have you observed?
Beauty was crimson. Her eyes overflowed with tears. It took all her control not to drop her hands to cover her sex as she felt Leon part her legs even wider now and gently touch the moisture there. Lord Gregory gave a soft laugh.
Yes, a truly remarkable princess, he said. I should have watched her more carefully.
Beauty gave a little muffled sob of shame, and yet the driving desire between her legs would not stop, and her face was stinging as Lord Gregory spoke to her.
Most of our little princesses are too frightened in the first few days to show such willingness to serve Beauty, he said in the same cold voice. They must be awakened and educated. But I see you are very passionate, and much enamored of your new masters and all they wish to teach you.
Beauty struggled against her tears. This was more humiliating, surely, than anything that had happened to her. And now Lord Gregory was taking her chin as the prince had taken Prince Alexei's chin, and forcing her to look at him. Beauty, this is a great virtue in you. You have no cause to be ashamed. It only means that you must learn yet another form of discipline. You are awakened to the desires of your master, as you should be. But you must learn to control that desire, just as you see the male slaves control it.
Yes, my lord, Beauty whispered.
Leon withdrew, and a moment later he returned with a small white tray on which were laid several little objects Beauty could not see. But to her terror, Lord Gregory parted her legs and affixed to that little hard kernel of tormented flesh a plaster of sorts that covered it and adhered to it. He shaped it quickly with his fingers as if he did not wish to have Beauty enjoy this. And Beauty was all the more relieved, for had she felt the ultimate pleasure, had she commenced to shudder and to blush with the final release from this torment, she would have been absolutely mortified. But now the little plaster gave her an added torment. What could it mean? It seemed Lord Gregory read her thoughts. That will prevent you from all too easily satisfying your newfound and undisciplined desire, Beauty. It will not alleviate it. It will merely prevent, shall we say, accidental release, until you have gained the proper control of yourself. I had not thought to commence this detailed instruction so soon, but I shall tell you now that you are never allowed to experience full pleasure, save at the whims of your master or mistress. Never, never must you be caught touching your private parts with your own hands, nor trying more secretly to alleviate your obvious misery. Well chosen words, Beauty thought, for all his coldness to me. But he was immediately gone, and once more Leon was bathing her.
Don't be so frightened and so ashamed, he said. You don't realize what a great advantage it is. To be taught to feel such pleasure is very difficult and far more humiliating. And your passion gives a bloom to you that cannot be achieved otherwise.
Beauty cried softly. The little plaster between her legs made her all the more conscious of her feelings there. Yet Leon's hands and voice were soothing her. Finally, he told her she must lie down in the bath and he must wash her long, beautiful hair for her. She let the warm water close over her and thought for a moment that she was covered by it, and that felt extremely good to her. As soon as she had been rinsed and dried, Beauty was put down on one of the beds nearby and arranged on her face so that Leon could rub an aromatic oil into her skin. It felt delicious to her.
Now, surely, he said as he was massaging her shoulders, there must be questions that you should like to ask me. You may do that if you like. It is not good for you to be confused about things unnecessarily. There is enough for you to fear without fears that are imaginary.
I may talk to you then? Beauty asked.
Yes, he said. I'm your groom. In a way, I belong to you. Each slave, no matter how he or she ranks or pleases or displeases, has a groom. And that groom is devoted to that slave and that slave's needs and wishes, as well as preparing the slave for the master. Now, of course, there will be times when I shall have to punish you, not because I take pleasure in it, though I can't imagine punishing a more beautiful slave than you, but because your master may order it. He may order you punished for disobedience or merely readied for him with some blows. But I will be doing it only because I have to.
But do you? Do you take pleasure in it? Beauty asked timidly.
It is difficult to resist beauty such as yours, he said, rubbing the oil into the backs of her arms and into the crevices of her elbows. But I should much rather groom you and care for you. He put down the oil and gave her hair another brisk rub with the towel, adjusting the pillow under her face. It felt so good to be lying here, with his hands working on her. But as I was saying before, you may ask me questions when I give you leave. Remember, when I give you leave, and I have just given it.
I don't know what to ask, she whispered. There is so much to ask.
Well, surely you must know already that all punishments here are for the pleasure of your masters and mistresses.
Yes.
And that nothing shall ever be done which truly harms you. You will never be burned, nor cut, nor injured, he said.
Ah, that is a great relief, Beauty said. But in truth, she had understood these limits without being told. But the other slaves, she asked, are they here for various reasons?
Sent as tributes, mostly, Leon answered. Our queen is very powerful and commands many allies, and of course all tributes are well fed, well guarded, well treated, just as you are well treated.
And what happens to them? Beauty asked tentatively. I mean, they are all young and—
They're returned to their kingdoms when the queen so wishes, and obviously very much better off for their service here. They're not so vain any longer. They have great self-control and often a different view of the world, one which enables them to achieve great understanding.
Beauty could scarcely guess what this meant. Leon massaged the oil into her sore calves and the tender flesh behind her knees. She felt drowsy. The sensation was growing ever more delicious, and she resisted it slightly, unwilling to let that craving between her legs torment her. Leon's fingers were strong, almost a little too strong, and they moved to her thighs, which the prince had reddened with the strap as much as her calves and buttocks. She shifted slightly against the soft, firm bedding. Her thoughts slowly cleared. "Then I might be sent home?" she asked, but it had no meaning for her.
"Yes, but you must never mention it, and certainly never ask for it. You are the property of your prince. You are his slave entirely."
"Yes," she whispered.
"And to beg to be released would be a terrible thing," Leon continued. "However, in time you will be sent home. There are different agreements for different slaves. Do you see that princess there?"
In a great hollow in the wall, on a shelf-like bed, lay a dark-haired girl whom Beauty had noticed. She had olive skin, richer in tone than that of Prince Alexei, who was also dark, and her hair was so long it lay in rippling strands over her buttocks. She slept with her face to the room, her mouth slightly open on the flat pillow.
"Now, she is Princess Eugenia," said Leon, "and she must be returned in 2 years by agreement. Her time is almost up, and she is broken-hearted. She wants to remain on the condition that her continued slavery will save two slaves from having to come here. Her kingdom might agree to these terms to keep back two other princesses."
"You mean she wants to stay?"
"Oh, yes," Leon said. "She is mad for Lord William, the queen's eldest cousin, and can't bear the thought of being sent home.
but there are others who are ever rebellious.
Who are they? Beauty asked, but before he could answer, she added quickly, though trying to sound indifferent. Is Prince Alexei one of those who is rebellious?
She could feel Leon's hands moving towards her buttocks, and now suddenly all those welts and sore places were brought to life as his fingers touched them. The oil burned slightly as Leon added droplets of it generously. And then those strong fingers commenced to work the flesh with no regard for its redness. Beauty winced, but even this pain had its pleasure. She felt her buttocks shaped by his hands lifted, separated, and then smoothed again. She blushed to think that it was Leon doing this who had been talking to her in such a civilized manner. And when his voice went on, she felt a new variant of agitation.
There is no end to it, she thought, the ways of being humiliated.
Prince Alexei is the queen's favorite, said Leon. The queen cannot bear to be separated from him for very long, and though he is a model of good behavior and devotion, he is, in his own way, relentlessly rebellious.
But how can that be? Beauty asked.
Ah, you must put your mind on the pleasing of your lords and ladies, Leon said. But I shall say this. Prince Alexei appears to have surrendered his will as a fine slave must. But there is a core in Prince Alexei that no one touches.
Beauty was enthralled by this answer. She thought of Prince Alexei on his hands and knees, his strong back and the curve of his buttocks as he had been driven back and forth across the prince's bedroom. She thought of the beauty of his face. A core in him no one touches, she mused.
But Leon had turned her over now, and when she saw him bending down, so close to her, she felt bashful and closed her eyes. He was rubbing the oil into her belly and into her legs, and she pressed her legs together and tried to turn to the side. You'll become very accustomed to my ministrations, princess, he said. You will think nothing of being groomed in time.
And firmly he pressed her shoulders to the pallet. His swift fingers smoothed the oil into her throat and into her arms.
Beauty opened her eyes cautiously to see him intent on his work. His pale eyes moved over her without passion, but with an obvious absorption.
Do you derive pleasure from it? She whispered, and was shocked to hear herself speak these words.
He emptied some oil into the palm of his left hand, and putting the bottle down beside him, he rubbed the oil into her breasts, lifting them and squeezing them as he had done to her buttocks. She closed her eyes again, biting her lip. She felt him roughly massaging her nipples. She almost let out a little cry. Be still, my dear, he said matter-of-factly. Your nipples are tender and must be slightly toughened. You've been subjected to very little sport so far from your love-stricken master.
Beauty was frightened by this. Her nipples felt painfully hard to her. She knew her face had colored darkly.
It seemed all the feeling in her breasts swelled and pumped toward those tiny, hard nipples. Mercifully, Leon let go of her breasts with a hard squeeze. But then he parted her legs and rubbed the oil into her inner thighs. And this was even worse for her. She could feel her sex throbbing. She wondered if it gave off heat that he could feel with his hands. She hoped he would be quick. Yet even as she lay, red-faced and trembling, he pushed her legs farther apart, and to her horror, parted the lips of her sex with his fingers as though inspecting her.
Oh, please, she whispered, turning her head from side to side, her eyes stinging.
Now, Beauty, he scolded gently. You must never, never plead for anything from anyone, not even from your loyal and devoted groom. I must inspect you to see if you are sore, and as I thought, you are. Your prince has been rather devoted.
Beauty bit her lip and closed her eyes as he widened the orifice and now oiled it.
She felt as if she were being pulled apart, and even under the plaster, that tiny knot of feeling throbbed above the opening Leon's fingers had broadened. If he touches it, I shall die, she thought. But he was quite careful not to do that, though she felt his fingers entering her and massaging the lips of her vagina. Poor darling slave, he whispered to her with feeling. Now, sit up. If I were to have my way, you would rest. But Lord Gregory wants you to see the rest of the training hall and the Hall of Punishments. Let me finish your hair quickly. He began to brush Beauty's hair and arrange it in coils on the back of her head as she sat, still trembling, her knees drawn up, and her head bowed.